Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, Melanie, we are back here again 1 week later.
Here we are.
Talking about
yet again
our week that has been. And we seem to go through this cycle. We have like a week where lots of things happen, and then we have a week where not much happens, and then we have a week where lots happens.
Well, welcome to my life as an introvert. Exactly. Doing things is tiring.
I need time to recover.
Recovering from doing things. Exactly.
That's pretty much. I was thinking, like, I feel pity for the extroverts. All the people who really need to be out there doing things, being with people who can't.
It must be really hard.
It's going to be really hard. I mean,
I'm not saying that in a patronizing way. Like, it must be really hard because as an introvert, I really am not feeling a lot of pain right now. I mean, there are things I miss. There are things I'm sad about.
Right.
But just being at home is not painful. But I remember when I was in grad school, I had a very, very extroverted roommate. And if she had to be home like 3 days in a row that like she hadn't left the house, she would be going insane. And I don't know what she's doing right now, sweet Megan, but hopefully not going too crazy in Minneapolis.
No kidding. I was reading an article in the paper about how like teens who are used, like a lot of these teens who are used to having like multiple sports and a job and a social life and other extracurriculars, who all of that is gone now. And they're kind of don't know what to do with themselves. And they're staying up late watching Netflix and sleep until noon. And parents are like, you know, some of them are trying to keep them on a schedule and keep them regimented. And others are like, what are we going to do? Like, you know, and for the first time in their lives, perhaps they're totally free of all that. And it'll be curious to see when this all ends, if, you know, someday some will embrace this new way of living and others will run back to the old way. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, that sort of covers all kinds of things. People who want to keep working from home, people who will desperately run back to working in an office. It's really kind of interesting.
It's a grand social experiment.
Well, hopefully some social scientists are preparing all kinds of studies to look at everything.
There will be entire careers made out of studying the coronavirus.
We'll
and the
burying
social
librarians
aspects of it. Yes.
In all the studies written. Dissertations and PhDs and all that will be built on this. Yes, this is the sort of thing that scientists live for. So anyway, let's talk about what we did this week, though. We did have some things. So last week we talked about putting our new garden bed in. So that was all done.
And this week you're thinking, oh, what did they plant? And we have not yet planted anything.
Well, see, again, this is New England.
We had snow this week.
We had snow.
Of course, a lot of the country had snow this week.
Right. And that's unusual. Like getting snow in May. This was the first time we had snow in May. And I'm glad people actually did the research, because all I remembered is in my memory, in my lifetime, I do remember it snowing in the Boston area in May, but I couldn't remember when that was. Well, it was 1977.
Right.
Which,
so not any time since I've lived in Boston.
Which must have been about 3 weeks before Star Wars premiered, right? Because that was May 25th, 1977.
There you go.
And it was like May 7th, I think it was. Anyway, May the 4th. Maybe that's what it was. The miracle snow fell upon the world, like the miracle snows in August in Rome with Our Lady of the Snows,
uh-huh.
which told them where to build our Mary Major, right?
Right.
Yes. Anyway, hold another tangent.
You kind of
totally.
Lost me on that
hey,
one.
Look, the point it's over there. So, Welcome to ADD Theater.
We had flurries this week. It wasn't snow that stuck.
But the main point is we can't really put things out till May 15th anyway. That's really the standard. Or you have to kind of keep an eye out and look at the weather around May 15th. When any year, not just this year, it doesn't snow every year, but you get cold, you get overnight frost sometimes, even into May. And so we're still not quite there yet. It's looking good this week.
Right. I mean, we're looking very spring-like. Our crabapple tree is in bloom, and we've got little tulips here. Most of our tulips did not make it this year, but we've got a couple.
Yeah.
I've noticed some buds on the roses.
Green leaves on the trees. That's my favorite thing. It's just having the leaves on the trees. The trees without leaves is so sad to me.
Right.
I like the leaves on the trees.
Yeah.
The shushing noise they make when the wind blows.
Oh, it's so nice. Yeah, our red maples are getting little bits of green on the ends of the tips, but they're still mostly covered in the red seeds.
The red buds, yeah.
They're the seeds now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Botany lesson.
Yes.
But the garden bed, we needed soil for it. So I ordered from the local landscaping company, and they brought 1.5 cubic yards of loam, the loose dirt, and then a couple bags of compost, which we will supplement with the compost that we've been making in our little compost bins for the last 5 years. 3 years? 4 years?
I have no idea.
It's been a long time we've been making that compost in those bins. And we just haven't had anything to put them in. So, and then the guy recommended, and you know what, he sold me, all right? He saw me coming a mile away. Or maybe he says he uses this in his own garden. But it's this special blend that he puts in the top that he plants the plants into. And it's called Coast of Maine. And it has all this like good stuff, including the the vermiculite, which gives it it's like bulk in it, basically, to give it some bulk and aerate it so it's not too dense for the plants. But also they make it with lobster shell compost.
He had you at lobster.
He had me at lobster shell.
You're such a lobster sucker for anything lobster.
He saw me go, well, no, now I'm thinking, why are we throwing our lobster shells away whenever we have lobster?
Because composting them would be very smelly.
Yeah. But
let somebody else do that. Let someone else have
this is my excuse for having lobster more often.
Smelly, rotting lobster shells in their yard.
Well, the shells, if you wash them off, would be fine. I think if you washed out the shells and threw away all the bits inside, you know, the other bits, but just the shell.
I'm not sure I want to conduct this experiment in my yard.
The neighbors will be complaining. Dogs will be howling at the fence. They already do.
Well, yeah, that would not be anything.
I don't think we've talked about the neighbors howling dogs yet. That'll be another discussion. So we got it delivered on Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, one of the days this week. And I'm like, okay, it's a yard and a half is a lot of dirt. You know, it's like a ton of dirt. Literally. And I'm like, I'm just going to have to get out there and start shoveling it into the barrel and rolling, you know, the little four-wheel barrel we got, and rolling it out there and dumping it, you know, so because I dump it in the driveway and the garden's all the way around the back of the house. Well, Ben and Sophie and then Anthony were like, can we do it?
I'm like, can we?
Can you? Well, you'll have to pay me $1 each.
Did you try to Tom Sawyer them?
No. They totally went for it. And they were out there. I mean, they weren't doing a great, like they weren't doing it fast, but they did most of it. They did like 3/4 of it before I had to get out there. And like, it was Wednesday, I think Wednesday we were getting rain. So I wanted to make sure, or Thursday we were getting rain. And I got out there Wednesday afternoon to kind of finish it up. And we actually didn't get the rain on Thursday. It was weird. But anyway, I got out there and they had gone off to do something else, but they had worked like all day. It was really impressive. And then while I was going, they came back out and helped me finish it off. I was quite impressed. And Bella was out there with the rake, although I think that was not voluntary. I think she told me that you told her to go out and help.
I at one point did tell her that she needed to. I think she wanted to like get some screen time, and I told her that she needed to
in order to get an eye turn.
She needed to contribute.
Yes, but she did a good job and she was happy to help. And I mean, it wasn't purely mercenary or grudging. It was pleasant. And so, yep, she got out there and Rick. And so we got it all in. That's the big thing. So it's all in there, ready to go. perfectly sitting there waiting for us to find the seeds that are somewhere in the...
I found some of the seeds.
Oh, good. The vegetable seeds or the plant, the flower
there's
seeds?
There's some radish, pumpkin, watermelon. These are several years old, so I don't know if they're really
good.
I'm
not sure pumpkin and watermelon are the thing.
No. The radishes, though, look promising.
We should get the radishes in the ground ASAP. Because the radishes come up early, and they will be a nice early thing. Yeah. I wonder if I should do another Lowe's or Home Depot run and run through those seeds there. Do they sell seeds at Stop and Shop?
No.
Sometimes supermarkets sell the seeds.
Target does, but I'm not going to Target.
No. Yeah, I have to figure it out. Because I don't think the mail order is going to work. Everything mail order is so slow right now that you can't guarantee. It'll be the end of the summer before we get the seeds
right.
in.
That would not be useful.
But we also want to get some plants, some seedlings, because like you don't want to start tomatoes right now.
We could try local nursery. Are they open?
Yes. Yes, actually, the place where I got the loam from is a nursery.
So maybe I'll go back to them.
I'll call them and see if they got seeds and seedlings.
There
probably.
You go.
Interesting. I love supporting the little local business in town. And they were really nice, actually, and really good, and they were really good price. All right, so we got the garden bed finished.
We did.
Also, we got a nice. So they've been all around the country. They've been doing flyovers, the military's flyovers,
yes.
in honor of nurses and doctors and first responders, and. The better cities got the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds. We got the local Air National Guard, which, you know, hey, I appreciate you guys. But we did get the F-15s, but we were on the flight path.
Yes, a friend of mine posted on Facebook that, woohoo, flyover today. And we were like, well, we're on the flight path. So
they
went out.
They had a map that showed it, yeah.
They had a map and, like, estimated times of arrival, like, flying over. For different spots.
And they were pretty close to overhead. I mean,
they were kind of on.
They were more over the center of town.
Yeah, they weren't like right overhead. They were sort of over the rooftop between the trees. But
yeah,
we could see them.
It was cool.
Could hear them.
I don't know. Were we more excited than the kids were? I think it was anticlimactic for them. I thought they expected
it to be closer and bigger, I think.
Yeah, although Bella did appreciate how loud they were.
Honestly, I think that the helicopter flyover when we went on the hike in the town forest and the helicopter was right overhead was a little bit more dramatic, maybe, and they were thinking something more like that, but
also,
I was excited.
I do follow the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds on Instagram, and so the kids are always looking over my shoulder seeing their videos. So maybe they were expecting a little of that, too, which that wasn't going to happen.
No.
All right. So then on Friday, this is weird. I'm not going to go too much detail, of course, but I had a doctor's appointment, which was weird. I had this appointment. So it was like a regular scheduled follow up with the specialist back in March. And they obviously rescheduled it in March to May. And I even as late as last week, I thought they're going to reschedule it again because everything's closed. Nope. I got the call. Hey, your appointment's next week. So, you know, come on in. And if you're sick or concerned, you can do a telehealth, you know, the FaceTime thing, or you can just come in. I'm like, I mean, I'm not sick. So I went in and it was just kind of odd. Had the mask. I didn't touch anything. I used my elbow to open the handicap door thing. They had the lotion, the alcohol. What is it? The hand sanitizer. Brain not work. Words come out not wrong. I'm like the Hulk. Hand sanitizer, and even to pass her my medical card, my insurance card, which I don't know why. I've been there before. Anyway, she cracked open the little window that she sits behind, like the tiniest bit. I had to slide it through and kind of reach through with two fingers holding the card so she could reach over. I'm like, lady, just open it a little more. I promise I won't breathe through the crack so I can she's like, we're both straining to reach it. Like, can we just open another inch? I can get it in. No. Anyway. So talking to the doctor was through masks and everything. It was kind of weird, but it was all right. But just it was a weird experience. I think if I were to do it again, I would just do the telehealth and just talk to him over the screen it could have been done over telehealth, just put it that way. So that was the doctor's office, and then we had a pack meeting for our pack, and this has been tough for scouting. I talked about the merit badge via the Google Classroom. Well, the pack, the Cub Scouts, like, we can't really do anything with the kids. But we want to maintain the connection to them and keep a sense of, hey, they're scouts and we're doing stuff. So the pack decided to have a Zoom pack meeting with 25 kids.
25 kids.
25 kids.
Yeah.
On Zoom. All, you know, kids under the age of 10. And it was chaos. It was.
I've seen our kids on.
I'm like,
video
mute chats. The microphones. Everybody, like the parents were just as bad as the kids in some cases. They're like talking, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, mute all the microphones. Just mute them all. And they wanted to do a scavenger hunt. And so go find something red. And then they have to go through each child, try to get their attention. Colin, what did you get? Colin, look, unmute your microphone. Oh my gosh. And it took we did two things, took a half hour.
Maybe they could have just like found them and not reported on each
But one. The problem is we didn't get, it wasn't on a paid account. So it was a 40 minute, we only had 40 minutes. So we spent a half hour doing this scavenger run, and then we had to rush through the last 10 minutes of whatever it is we had planned, you know, to do the oath, the scout oath and law and all that other jazz. Like, next time, let's just get to business if we're going to do it, or use a different thing that doesn't have a time limit, like Google Meet or something.
Right.
So I'm not sure which one went better or worse, that or my board meeting from Mass Citizens for Life with all the people. Many of the people over the age of 60 or 70 who there are plenty of people over the age of 60 and 70 who know how to use these tools appropriately and well. That doesn't describe
being one of them.
Your mom being one of them. That doesn't describe this crowd. Oh my gosh. It was the same thing. You got two people in the same room, like a husband and wife who are both on the board on two different phones. So the feedback is like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Zoom is become the bane. Anyway, so that was the week. I mean, I didn't have much from your week. Was just basically school shopping.
I don't really remember this week.
It was a blur.
We must have had a week. The kids worked every day.
We're keeping at the schooling. We're going at our pace. Bella's doing really well with her math. She's like 50% of way through eighth grade math, which is good considering she only got to eighth grade math in January, maybe February. She's making her way. She'll be at ninth grade math by the fall, which will be good. That's what she'll be right on target.
She'll be right on target.
And she's doing it without much input from me. She's able to work through problems and figure things out, which is great.
Yeah, I feel like we're not doing much advancing with schoolwork right now. We're sort of doing bare minimum maintenance, which is, I guess, what most of the nation is doing with school, if they're doing at all. We're reading Lord of the Rings for our literature selection right now, and everyone's enjoying that.
Mm.
We got to Rivendell. We had the Council of Elrond. Now they're setting off. They're
One
getting
does
ready
not
to
simply
set off.
Walk into Mordor,
That's
which is not in the book.
In the book. Not in the book. Not in the book. But I love Lord of the Rings. I love reading it with them. It's very fun. Some of them remember it to some different extents.
From before.
Some of them don't remember it at all. It's fun watching Lucy's face while I read. She's the most expressive face. I just like I kind of just glance over her every couple minutes and just watch her like. Face like it's the perfect response.
So unselfconscious about her expressions.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then there's Bella, who has whole sections of it literally memorized.
Oh yeah,
and she'll pop out with what was it in the car today? She was reciting the poem of the song of of Aragorn's sword.
The blade that was broken.
The blade that was broken.
Her name shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king.
Yes, she was like reciting. She just out of the blue started reciting that to herself, like because she remembers whole sections of poetry and things like that. Which, you know, I wonder where that comes from. And but Lord of the Rings is a fundamental foundational piece of literature for her, as it was for me and for you.
Right. It is. It is a foundational text. It is important.
Yeah.
I decided that since Lucy and Anthony and Ben didn't really remember it very well, it just had to be.
It was time.
It was time.
Andy Serkis, who played Gollum in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, did a thing last week where he read all of The Hobbit straight through for raising money for charity, which was pretty awesome. It would have been cool to watch some of that.
Yeah, the kids wouldn't have got it because they haven't seen the movies.
Well, he does the voices, though. He could do the voices. He could do the different voices.
It would be interesting to watch, yeah.
Yes. All right, so, yeah. And otherwise, we're just kind of marking time because we can't go to museums and we can't go...
Right. I thought about, like, our nice days this week were, like, Monday and Tuesday, and I thought about making them go on a hike or a walk, and I wasn't feeling it. I was pretty sure they weren't going to be feeling it. I just didn't feel in the mood to, like...
It's our goal to get out at least one day a week out into nature and walk around somewhere. And
they have had days of playing outside in the yard, though. Yeah. And so I have been kicking them out a lot more frequently now.
Been nicer, yeah. So, all right. So it's also not been an exciting week for a lot of cooking. We've had, we've done cooking. We have a few things we've talked about before, so there's no sense going over those again. But you did make a new bread.
I did. And I didn't really remember where the inspiration. Oh, I remember. So you had a chocolate stout in the fridge.
Yeah.
It's been in there since who knows when.
I like a chocolate stout or a coffee stout. I like stouts like that. But this one was way too like candy bar chocolate.
You know what's funny is I posted a picture of it and one of my friends said, oh, that's one I really like. It's one of my favorites.
Well, if someone who's really into chocolate more than beer would probably like it.
This is a person who is more beer than chocolate, so I was kind of surprised. Anyway.
Interesting.
So I sort of got the idea, like, you pulled it out, you were cleaning out the fridge, and I said, I should bake something with, like a beer bread with that. And I've made, like, a baking soda, like a soda bread.
Soda bread, yeah.
Beer bread before. But I've got this sourdough starter I've been feeding and occasionally baking things with. And I thought, sourdough beer bread, this has got to be a thing. So I Googled it. And in fact, it is a thing. I found a recipe for sourdough beer bread, which used rye flour in addition to the wheat. So I thought that sounds promising. I've got some rye flour. I've got this chocolate stout. I've got my sourdough starter. And it was like an overnight rise, and it came out. It was so good. So good. This was brilliant that the rye had this nutty flavor. And then there was the chocolate notes and the beer notes and the sourdough notes. It was really complex.
Had that yeastiness from the beer a little bit.
Right.
So like beer yeast, which is different from just regular yeast. But yes, a little bit of the chocolate note, which really pairs well with rye, that rye dark, toastiness.
Right. When this bread baked up with this dark chocolate colored crust too.
Yeah.
Really thick, dark crust. This bread goes into the oven at 500 degrees. And then after 15 minutes, you bring it down to 450. So it's like a hot, fast cook.
So the crust is nice and crackly, but the interior was really moist.
Really, really soft and airy, big bubbles.
But even better the second day.
Oh, it was so good.
Especially if you toast it with some, a little butter on it. That was really good. Yeah. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I had it left over on like the third or fourth day with some soup that I'd made. And it was just as good then.
So
now I want to go buy more chocolate stout to make more chocolate stout bread. Come on.
I thought we talked about it last week, but I don't think I didn't make a note of it. So if we talked about it last week, I apologize for talking about it again.
No, because I made it on Tuesday. I couldn't have talked about it last week.
So I used one of your homemade breads last Sunday when Bella made the bacon outside to make bacon toast.
Yeah, that was my last batch of experimental bread. Sourdough.
Oh, okay. That was the other sourdough. Okay.
I think.
Because I was trying to remember with the bacon fat. And that would be just over the top.
That might have been almost too much.
Head exploding. So, yeah. I do want to do bacon toast with avocado at some point, but that's a whole nother show. So that's what we've been cooking. I mean, we had pizza this week too from the local pizza place, and chicken teriyaki with just a basic teriyaki sauce, which is really sweet. And I'm not sure if it could be less sweet.
It could maybe be a bit less sweet.
I would like to pull back on the sweetness a bit and I would love to be able to put a little spice in it.
I don't think you're going to get away with that.
No. What I did was, is I actually added some sriracha to my food on
at the
plate.
Table.
And it was really good. It really balanced the sweetness out. So I think a little bit of spice would really balance out the overly sweetness of it. It was just a little too much. It was good. It was a good recipe. So let's talk about entertainment, what we've been reading and watching. So let's talk about the book you recommended for me called Crimson Bound by Rosamund Hodge. With a full disclaimer, Rosamund is a friend. She's the sister of our friend Brendan, and his wife is a Kat, and friends. We actually stay with them, and
my sister actually also was at college with Rosamund at University of Dallas.
Yes,
so
there are connections.
There are connections.
Right.
I would like these books. I would like her books, even if I didn't know her, though.
So the premise is, so they're fantasy novels, magic and swords and things. Which is a genre I like very much, and the premise a couple of her books are reworkings of fairy tales. Is that fair to say?
Right.
I didn't quite cotton to which fairy tale this was until I read the afterword in this one.
Whereas I actually read an interview with her before the book was released, so I already kind of had it in my mind what it was going to be about.
And this was not her first novel, right?
No, her first novel was Cruel Beauty.
Cruel Beauty, okay, which was a Beauty and the Beast reworking.
Beauty and the Beast, Cupid and Psyche, yeah.
And this one was basically sort of a retelling or reworking of Little Red Riding Hood.
Right.
Which, I mean, in retrospect, I get it. I get who the wolf was. I get who, you know, that she's the girl on her way to Granny's through the woods. I saw that. So, yes. So the setting is a fantasy world, which is very much like 18th century France.
Right. The palace is very similar to sort of Palace of Versailles, even though it's not really Versailles.
It's not Versailles. It's not France. It's not Paris, but it's all very much like it.
It's very French.
Yes. The names are French and all this stuff. There is religion. There is a bishop, but it's. The savior in the religion is not Jesus. He's not the savior. It's the, I don't know, he didn't die by crucifixion. He died by dismemberment or something. And there was, it's not really that important, but there is a analog to Catholicism in it, which was interesting. And Rosamund is Catholic, and she's, you know, a faithful Catholic. So she treats religion well and appropriately.
Actually, I have to say this novel has one of my favorite all-time fictional confession scenes in it.
Right. A character goes to confession, and it's a real, it's not like overly pious, sappy. It's not, fake. It actually, and it's not gratuitous. It's
integral to the plot.
It works in the plot.
The only other novel that I've seen that has confession as well depicted is a novel by Michael O'Brien, Sophia House.
Mm-hmm.
Like of my top two favorite confession scenes in literature.
Now, this is not a Christian fiction book. This is
not Catholic.
Like, you wouldn't be filed in those areas. But yet it is imbued with a Catholic worldview.
Right. Yeah, that's what I like about her novels. They don't feel like...
They don't bang you over the head with with religion.
This is a Christian book.
It's, in fact, her books are enjoyed by many people who are probably
Christianity. Yeah, I expect that they would be very much enjoyed by people who are not Christian at all.
And perhaps surprised by her faith when they encounter her online and see her. Yeah. In fact, I think I've seen her say things along those lines, with like responses from certain readers who are surprised by that she actually is a faithful Catholic. So the book deals with, so there's the Great Forest, which is sort of this magical forest that it coexists with the real world. And there's a creature behind it called the Devourer, which is essentially like a Satan figure, which is seeking to devour the world, It's ultimate nihilism, the ultimate destroyer. It wants to just destroy.
It reminds me a bit of the Nothing in Neverending Story. You've never read Neverending
Which I've
Story.
Never read it or seen it.
Right. Or, oh, there was something else. It slipped my mind now. It's in another fictional analog.
So I enjoyed it. It's a bit of a, it had a bit of a romance novel feel to the first half, at least. There's a bit of, I don't know. I kind of could, there's a bit of the whole thing where the two characters, they outwardly dislike each other and think they dislike each other, but you can totally see that they're going to get together like at some point. Except there's going to be a time when there's a misunderstanding and there's a split, but then they have to come back together. It's like a rom-com, you know?
Right.
So there was a little bit of that. Not my favorite sort of thing. That's not really my, but nevertheless, I really enjoyed it. It was a good book. I'm glad you recommended it to me. That's actually been on my reading list for a while. And when I was looking for the next thing to read, that was the one I picked because you recommended it. So,
It's always gratifying to have my recommendations taken under advisement.
Well, just like your Guy Gavriel K recommendations, Tagana, which I need to reread because I don't really remember it. But
yeah,
which Guy Gavriel K really, especially his early stuff, is really good. Tagana and the Serantium Duology, which two books, right?
Two books.
The Serantium Duology, which is really good, and then the Lines of Elrasan.
Yes,
I think that's all I read of his.
I think you should read Lost Light of the Sun. You'd really like it. It's sort of a Viking analog.
Interesting. So he does sort of the same sort of thing as we said with Rosamund's books, which was it's a world where the places are very much like our world, but
yeah, it's sort of,
it's different.
He sort of writes alt history fantasy where there are elements in his novels which are fantastical. And yet he's generally is sticking fairly close to a particular historical time and place, although he will often draw elements from not exactly the same time. Like,
right.
You know, there's a little bit of Byzantium here, but then there's also this thing which happened in Rome over here, and we're going to kind of pull them together. And because it's fantasy and not historical fiction, he can play fast and loose with the characters. Yes. He can play fast and loose with historical events. And yet you get a very good sense of a particular time and place. And right. I really like that.
So the Serantium Duology is really the story of the Byzantine Empire and the death of Emperor Justinian. Yeah.
It's sort of Justinian and Theodora, kind of.
Sort of, with other stuff. And then Lines of Elrasan is the story of El Cid in Spain.
Yes.
And so, as you see,
and the not the Reconquista, the fall of,
right, the conquering of Spain
by the Muslims,
right, the Moorish invasion. So that's also actually recommended. We hadn't planned to talk about, but yeah, I would totally recommend the Serantium Duology. So the other thing we wanted to talk about was a TV show that we both enjoy. There's only a handful of shows that we watch together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And usually there's like one show at a time that's our show that we watch together. When we were first married, it was Lost. We both watched Lost. Then it was Castle.
Love Castle. Nathan Fillion.
Yeah. And that leads us to the current one, which is The Rookie, also starring Nathan Fillion.
Really like Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, we're both big fans of Nathan Fillion.
I would not generally watch. I'm not huge into police procedurals. I've watched a few. I've enjoyed a few.
Yeah.
I really like them when they can become very repetitive. If they're really good character driven, if it's an actor I like or a character I like, I can really get into them though.
Right. If they're well written too.
Right.
And The Rookie is, I mean, it's not high drama. It's not CSI. It's not Bosch. It's not like amazing crime, you know, crime solving detective thing.
It's kind of comedy drama. Like there's an element of the,
it's light cop drama with, but it's really personality driven, and it's the personality of Nathan Fillion's character, Nolan, that really drives it.
Yes.
And the premise is he's a 40 something year old rookie in the LAPD. He was a contractor, he had married, he had a kid, he lived in Pennsylvania. He got divorced. He was looking to figure what to do with the rest of his life. He ended up deciding to become a policeman, moved to LA, entered the police academy, and graduated as the oldest rookie ever. And it's actually based on a true story. This guy who graduated as the oldest rookie ever, like I think it was in his late 30s or something. And so, but he's this, comes from, you know, Pennsylvania is not really the middle of America, but parts of Pennsylvania are parts of, you know, this sort of old fashioned, optimistic, helping others, not cynical America.
Yeah, he's like just the nicest guy.
He's relentlessly positive. He's relentlessly about helping people.
And yet not sappy and not really.
And not naive.
And not naive. No, he's in fact, he's kind of worldly wise compared to the other rookies. I mean, he's got experience. And yet there is a little bit of naivete in him.
Yes. Sometimes the optimism leads him to overlook the things that more experienced police say. Nah. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Sometimes his positive attitude leads him to solutions which are sort of thinking outside the box, which the older, more experienced cops wouldn't have come up with, and they work. And then sometimes it leads him to, it's like horrible classic, you know, blunders.
Like a land war in Asia.
Right. And I like that mix. You never know what you're going to get in any given episode. Is it going to be Nolan's blunder, or is it going to be Nolan the super cop?
And I can often do the thing I do, which is I can tell the bad guy as soon as I see him on screen, whether it's obvious or not. But a couple of times they've really surprised me. In fact, I'm no spoilers, but they're doing a 2-part season finale for this is the second season. And we've watched the first part and we should be watching the second part by the time you listen to this. And I was really shocked at the conclusion of the first part. That came out of left field. So
it's nice when you get surprised.
I love it when they can surprise me, because it means that the writers are thinking outside the box. And the reason I can predict who the bad guy is and what's going on, like I predicted part of the thing last week. But the reason I can predict is because the writers have conventions that they follow. Like if this happens and that happens and that happens, it's because this character is going to be important to this. This guy showing up here at this time doing this sort of thing is because the writer intends to use them this way later. It's just a convention that everybody falls into patterns, and this is the patterns that Hollywood falls into with cop shows. And I like when cop shows break out of those patterns. I mean, it's not like Bosch, which I talked about last week, which I think it was last week, which is a much grittier, realistic cop show.
Yeah, The Rookie is not, if it's you're not looking for realism, you're not going to get realism. Yeah, no, it's kind of over the top scenarios where there is no way that one cop,
rookie would have. Oh, let's see. He was there when his precinct captain was killed by a bad guy with him while they were being held captive. And then he.
Spoilers, sweetie.
No, well, this is I mean, that's pretty
generic
and over a year ago. You know, just like serial killers and, you know, like all these different like scenarios, like way over the top,
over bomb threat,
terrorists. Like, yeah, there's no way that one rookie cop would.
Also, how many SWAT?
How many times do they do entries that should have been a SWAT team instead of a rookie and his training officer?
Yeah.
So it's not super realism, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's like Castle. Castle was nowhere near realistic, you know, cop show, but it was a lot of fun because of the interactions of the characters, and the writing was fun, and you liked the characters. So
I like the writing. And I just love Nathan Fillion.
Yeah,
I'll watch him in almost anything.
Yeah, yeah. Serenity Now. So that's what we're talking about this week for stuff we're reading and watching. Was there something
I feel like I read something that I should be talking about or watch something, and my brain is just...
Have you watched any more Marvel movies?
I have not. I feel like... I was just saying this to my sister today. I have, like, picked up and watched, like, half episodes or half hours of a bunch of different things, and I'm just... feeling like nothing's really grabbing me. Mm. I've watched parts of movies, parts of series, parts of miniseries, and I just kind of like, I watch a little bit and think, no, this isn't what I'm looking for. I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm not finding it.
I'll tell you one thing I watched this week was Disney Plus has a new behind the scenes series for The Mandalorian for the first season. It's really more about Star Wars in general, but the first episode was about the directors, all the different directors they had. Uh-huh. The second episode was about the background of Star Wars, the legend, you know, the how it came to be, the sort of things is the basis for The Mandalorian. And this one guy named Dave Filoni, he's executive producer.
Okay.
created the Clone Wars series, Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars Resistance. He's behind all the animated series, and now he's behind this live action. And he was brought in by George Lucas to help create Clone Wars about a decade ago. And he has really become the keeper of George Lucas's legacy in an official sense, but he's the guy who lives and breathes Star Wars as a fan, like in Lucasfilm. I mean, there are plenty of fans at Lucasfilm, don't get me wrong, but he gets it. And there is 5 minutes at the end of the second episode of this Disney Gallery, I think it's called, episode on The Mandalorian, where they just let him go. Like, they're sitting around a table, you know, and they mm-hmm. just let him go for like 5 minutes, where he explicates the idea behind Star Wars from the Duel of the Fates, the battle with Darth Maul, all the way through to, at least through Return of the Jedi and Luke's battle with the Emperor, you know, Luke and Darth Vader mm-hmm. with the Emperor. And he gets this through line of why everything happened, why everything was necessary for them to get there, why he went through the hero's journey of Anakin from start to end. And it was amazing. It was incredible. I had never heard anyone do such a good job of getting to the heart of what Star Wars is about and why it's not just a kid's story about spaceships and laser battles. It's a human story, and stories of fathers and sons, and story of love, and a story of love and hate, really. But love, and also that longing for love, that an unfulfilled longing for love that turns bad. And just, it was really amazing to watch this. I was like, you know, jumping in my chair going, this is exactly it. This is what Star, if I wanted to show someone what Star Wars is about, I would show them this 5 minute clip. Really amazing. And so my thought is Dave Filoni is going to become the Kevin Feige of Star Wars, who's Kevin Feige, right? He's the guy behind all of the Marvel movies. So he's the executive producer.
So there's one sort of vision that's overarching the
right.
whole thing.
He's the keeper of the vision. I mean, all the Marvel movies connect. They all have to have a vision and a unity of, not, they don't have to be exactly the same, but they do have some unity of voice. They have a style. They have a way of being Marvel movies. You know, a taste. I don't know. That's not the right word.
Tone?
A tone, yeah.
Voice?
But a visual tone and a voice. I think Dave, a lot of people were worried that when George Lucas sold everything off to Disney and left, that would be lost. Who would be the keeper of that vision? And at first it was J.J. Abrams directing The Force Awakens, but a lot of fans weren't happy with that. And he only directed two movies, you know, that was, he's not there. He's not running things. And then Kathleen Kennedy, who's the president of Lucasfilm, but, you know, hits and misses, and she's more of a business person, you know. And there's a couple lower level people who are pretty important about maintaining a continuity, but the vision is clearly Dave Filoni. He's clearly is a keeper of the vision of what Star Wars is about. And I really think he's going to take up that mantle into the future.
If they let him.
Yeah. Well, so he certainly has the blessing of George Lucas, and he has the blessing of everyone involved in The Mandalorian credits him with making sure The Mandalorian, as different as it is, as a space Western, is still Star Wars at its heart, and why it still feels like Star Wars, despite being, you know, it's not just a different sci-fi show that has stormtrooper outfits and Mandalorian armor. It's still Star Wars.
It's true. It is. And it's kind of a weird fusion because it's still Star Wars. And yet it's so very,
it's so very far from the Star Wars we recognize.
Well, right. It's so very Western.
Right. And it doesn't involve the big movements of, you know, defeating the Empire and rebellion and the New Republic and the Jedi. I mean, the Jedi aren't even any. I mean, you have the child.
The child is a Jedi.
Well,
clearly.
No, the child has the is a force user.
Right, right.
But Jedi and Sith, it's Jedi, not even there. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, the people around him don't even know what it is he's able, why he's able to do this. The force is just sort of, nobody knows around here really knows about the force. Right. They're kind of surprised by it. So you have this story that could be so foreign to Star Wars, but yet everyone credits Dave Filoni. Like the executive producer, the guy who really created it, is Jon Favreau. He's the big head of everything. But Dave Filoni is like co-executive producer, and he's the keeper of it. And as much of a moneymaker this is, Disney Plus would be an okay network, like an okay streaming service.
Right. I'm not sure I would be all that interested.
Yeah, exactly. But with this, The Mandalorian is like, Disney has 54 million subscribers. The most popular star figure in Star Wars right now is Baby Yoda, the child. Like, bigger than Luke, bigger than Han Solo, like, bigger than Rey or Finn or anybody.
How do you determine bigger than, like, by what metric?
Oh, so one of the metrics is searches on, or fan surveys or surveys, how much they're talked about in online, in general circles. Like, he's as recognizable in general to the general public outside of the hardcore fans,
uh-huh,
as Darth Vader is. He's as recognizable as Luke is, probably more so, because Luke hasn't had a large role in Star Wars since Return of the Jedi. So yeah, I mean, Baby Yoda the child is huge, and that's because Dave Filoni, they credit him with making sure, and Favreau, with A, keeping him under wraps, and B, making sure that he is, cute and but also mysterious and but embodies a lot of what makes Star Wars great. So anyway, this is my 5-minute pain.
You're a fanning.
I am fanning, yeah, a Dave Filoni, but and also over this series called The Gallery on Disney Plus. So if you get a chance,
I'll have to check it out.
The first two episodes, but definitely the second episode especially. There's a new episode every Friday. So just to hold us over until we get the second season. So then the last thing we wanted to talk about is, we had a conversation this week where a lot of states are opening up with the virus stuff. The lockdowns are ending. People are able to go out more. We're still supposed to be social distancing and wearing masks. People doing that more or less. But for our purposes, a lot of churches are opening, having public masses again.
Yeah, my parents went to mass today at their parish, and there were, I think, 25 people there, maybe.
Which was interesting, because they said they could have had up to 50, but only 25 people showed.
Right. My mom said, this was her report, they had 4 choir members all wearing masks and singing in masks. The priests were wearing masks when they processed in, and when they were sitting, but not when they were actually saying the mass. She said that she discovered that it was very, very hard to cry in a mask, because you can't really wipe your nose. And she was crying because she said the look on their pastor's face when he saw, like, he finally
could
able
finally
to
celebrate mass
to
with
celebrate
the people.
Mass with his people. She said it was just, like, he was so very moved, and she was so very moved, and it was just very happy.
Don't make us cry in the masks.
Don't make us cry in the masks.
So we've been talking about what happens, and we talked a little bit about, like, in the big scale of things, like what happens when to parish life when things happen. But we're talking about our family. What do we do when the time comes when our parish opens?
Right.
And it will probably be a limited mass, like we said, like 25 or 50 people will be allowed.
And this is pure speculation, because right now,
there's nothing.
We know that
anything.
We're not going to hear anything until May 18th from the governor. And who knows at that point what he's going to say.
Right.
It's
And I know that I've heard that at the Archdiocese, they're talking about it. There's conversation. The Presbyteral Council, the Archbishop, different departments, they're talking about what, given what's possible, what will we be able to do? So there's talking about it. But so we kind of assume, all right, so what if it's like other places, there'll be a cap on the number of people who can be in the church, depending on the size of the church. and you won't be able to sit near other people. We won't have the sign of sign of peace. Everyone will have to wear a mask. Communion will have to be different somehow. We'll have to figure that out. How are we going to do communion with masks? That whole thing. So, but what do we do, our family? It's probably going to be for a long time to come. The Sunday obligation will be lifted. There will be dispensed from it. Someone asked, does watching Mass on TV fulfill my Sunday obligation? I saw someone ask that online.
No.
And no, but, and yes, there still is a Sunday obligation. That was the second part. Do I still have a Sunday obligation? Yes, but you're dispensed from it. Like, the obligation is there always. There is, we have an obligation. That's an objective fact. Whether you individually, subjectively, are required to go through with it, that's a different question.
Right. And there are ordinary,
you can be dispensed from it.
Right. There are ordinary means, ways in which we're dispensed from it. If you're sick, you're always dispensed from it.
Right.
If you're caring for a sick child, you're dispensed from it.
Right. If you cannot safely get to church, you're dispensed from it.
Like, for example, if there's a hurricane or a flood or a blizzard.
Yes. And that, those have come up in for us.
We have missed Mass because of blizzards before.
Yes. So, and for sickness before, yes, as well. So we were talking about, what do we do when the time comes, when the opportunity arises for us to go to Mass under these conditions? Should we go? I mean, we have certain underlying conditions in our family. At least four members of our family have breathing conditions that if we were to get the virus would be dangerous, more dangerous than for someone who didn't have these conditions, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, you know, I also have, you know, as they say, comorbidities and that sort of thing, which getting the virus would be problematic. Now, we do go out. We go to the grocery store as necessary. And we go to other stores as necessary. But we don't take the whole family. And at church, you know, you're in the pew. Are they going to deep clean between every Mass? They're supposed to. They say they're going to. Or do we trust the kids to not touch things with their hands and then touch their face and put their hand under the mask? And that's an open question. So there's a lot of these concerns. And what we decided, what? That,
well, I don't think we decided. We decided we don't have enough information to know for sure about anything right at this point.
That's right.
But
we're sort of leaning.
But we're sort of talking about, like, under what conditions would we feel okay? We're ready to go back, regardless of whether the church is open and having Mass. At what point do we feel like we will be comfortable doing that?
Right, because one of the things that's been talked about is even when the churches are open, under these limited conditions, people will still be dispensed from their obligations. I think I was trying to make that point earlier. Right. I don't think I made that explicitly. So, and we talk about this because we think other people will be having similar conversations, perhaps. And so this is, I hope, you know, hopefully a helpful conversation to have and maybe encourage others to do so as well. But so
I feel like, for one, our situation is not necessarily the same as that of other people. Our parish is in the city that, after Boston, has the most number of
the highest percentage and the highest number of infections
in the state. And our state is number three in the country.
Right. Our county has more cases than most states.
Right. So we're looking at the towns around us, the places where we are.
We're in the hot zone.
Are in a hot zone. So our calculus is probably going to be very different from, say, my parents, who live in a place that doesn't
Austin
have...
Austin is much, much less. Texas.
Yeah. Much, much, much different conditions. And so that's part of my calculation as I'm looking at things, is what are the particular conditions...
Where we live.
In, you know, our particular community.
Right.
And that, I think, plays a lot of part in my hesitation, because in general, I feel fairly safe, like, going to the grocery store. Everybody is wearing a mask.
Which is in a different community from where our parish is.
Right.
And there are reasons to think that people in our parish community might not be in the situation. Well, I'm trying to think of a good way to say this. That culturally, because they come from a number of different cultures, a lot of people, immigrants from other cultures, well, culturally, people have may not have the same reservations that we get on. So they may not be able to adhere to social distancing in the same way, because culturally they are very close people. They're very, but they're used to being together.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that watching our live stream mass from our parish, our pastor has been very emphatic about, you know, reminding people these things are important. When the government asks people to keep their distance and not gather together in groups, this is something that we really need to take seriously and do as our, you know, we have a Christian obligation to do these things. And I get the feeling that he's like really understanding that there's a strong pastoral need for this message.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that I really want to get more data and see more of like what the specifics are going to be, what the timeline is, everything like that before I can even make a decision. We are also talking about this in the context of like the summer camps for the kids.
Right. Scouts, the BSA, their local council anyway, says that they're still planning to do summer camps.
And I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
I'm not sure that they'll actually be able to do it, but they're still planning for it.
I mean, which is not, I mean, it's, I from their perspective, I think planning is not a bad thing. What will we do if we can't?
And they've already announced, like, if they have to cancel or if they have to change the date of the camp and you can't make it for any reason at all, full refund, no one will be held to obligation, which is good because it's expensive. But, like, so, like, how will they do this? Will kids have to be segregated? Will they have to take a coronavirus test before they go? Will they be temperature checked on a regular basis? Like, these are kids from all over the place being put together.
Right. You know, which seems like that you're risking a lot of potential vectors.
Right.
And you don't have any control over that.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how that would work.
I really think that as much as I really would love the camp experience to be something that they experience, that this might not be the best year to dive into that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's
so
really
so many questions. And I don't want to live my life in fear. At the same time, I want to be cautious and prudent.
Yeah.
And I think that there's room for different people to make different decisions about what is prudent for their particular families and their situations. And different people might have different calculus.
And one of the things where we're making, you know, making these decisions like this is, you know, people say, oh, you know, most of the people who are dying from the disease are very elderly, you know, and your people are young. It's not just about dying from the disease, too. We don't yet know what the long-term effects of having been, you know, infected by this disease are. Sometimes these diseases can have, as we saw, you know, like with polio and other diseases earlier last century, they can have lifelong effects. In fact, I saw an article where the Department of Defense is starting to consider whether to ban anyone who's ever been sick with the virus from enlistment. Because they have concerns they have about long-term respiratory effects.
Right, I've seen concerns about respiratory effects and about blood clots.
And stroke and other things.
And other,
I mean, this isn't just a... I mean, I've seen some people kind of dismiss it as, well, it's like a bad cold. Just get it and get it over with. I'm not sure that's like... I'm not sure that's... For us, that's not prudent. I mean, you make your own decision, but I'm not going to rush out to...
Yeah, I had pneumonia when I was in college, and I was kind of shocked, actually... 2 years ago, I had an MRI for a completely unrelated thing, but the radiology report was incredibly extensive and sort of commented on everything that they could see in the...
Including
my lungs, which it said had scarring in the bottoms of both lungs from that pneumonia that I had 20 years ago. These things, you know, diseases can have long-term effects that you aren't even aware of. And that's one of the things that I have concerns about is like, as I get older, what kinds of damage can I afford to have?
Like Anthony's Lyme disease, which he will have for his whole life. He will have effects from that.
Right. He's going to have cardiology follow-ups his entire life to make sure that his heart is in good shape, because we know that the Lyme disease does attack the heart and he might. Yeah. In fact, have problems.
Yes. And so this is why we're so cautious about it. And why we're probably, despite the fact that we are desperate to receive the Eucharist again. This is the longest either of us have ever gone in life without going to Mass and receiving the Eucharist. I mean, that just blows my mind. Like, I've never gone this long in my entire life. And so we are, it's not like we're being flippant about it. We are desperate to receive Jesus again, but I also know that he has given us both prudence, the gift of prudence, and the obligation to care for our family and to do the prudent thing for them. And based on our situation, again, this isn't about anyone else's situation, but this is based on ours. But maybe this will help people think about it for themselves and, you know, come up. And we'd love to hear what your calculus is and what you are thinking for your family. Hopefully it helps you. Anyway, let's wrap it up there. Before we go, I want to take a moment, as we always do, this very important thing, actually, which is to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Bennett G, Tara H, and I didn't write everything down, Francis B, Carla K, and Jason K. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Sorry, I had to scroll there on the screen. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion? If you have any feedback or commentary, you can let us know by going to sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. I'll put some links to the books that we talked about and The Rookie, so you can check them out on our show notes at sqpn.com. Remember to like Raising the Bets on our StarQuest Facebook page or retweet us on Twitter at sqpn, and leave us comments on all the various social media. And if you when you engage with us, it helps other people to see the show and helps us to get new listeners, which we really appreciate. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.